Cut out my anger. Cut out all that I believe. That hole in me, my friend. You would call me, your voice would float to the latest Columbia House Party single. Jake, what's up, man?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Good. It's a fun week of content that is all over the place here at Columbia House Party. Fun Monday main feed episode, a Friday single that is not related to it, as we sometimes do, and recently that spooky Halloween bonus episode. So this is coming out on October 30th, the day before Halloween. It's Devil's Night. Jake, will you be egging any of your enemies this evening?
No, I don't think I'll be doing anything like that. I'm not really like a Halloween guy, so.
Yeah. You are a throw food at your enemies guy, so this Devil's Night could be the perfect middle ground for you.
But I'm not, like, going to go outside.
No, me neither. Yeah. If you're going to egg the principal, please do so responsibly. Wear a mask.
Please do so.
Sanitize the eggs before you throw them. Sanitize the toilet paper before you throw it at your neighbor's trees.
That's exactly right.
All right. This is your latest Columbia House Party single. Today, we're talking about an album that came out in early October that both of us were quite fond of and, you know, maybe fits a full episode at some point in the future. But we wanted to bring it to people's attention because it rules. Jake, what do you got for us?
So today, I feel like I've been talking about this guy pretty nonstop for months now. It's always nice when that happens and then you're proven right by sort of the world at large.
It's exactly how I feel about like when a Raptors 905 guy becomes a good contributor for the Raptors.
Yeah, exactly. Today we're talking about Barty Strange, who has sort of taken over my 2020 and just like timing wise has sort of been the soundtrack to, you know, quarantine and social distancing, which I'm sure he wouldn't love to be, but sort of what happened. Today we're going to talk about a song from, as you said, his first full length that came out a couple weeks ago called Live Forever. But first, a little history on Barty's himself. This is according to his bio on the Brassland website. His mother was an opera singer while his father served in the military. He was an army kid, traveling around a lot as a youth. He was actually born in Ipswich, England in 1989. Also learned that he's younger than me, which I don't love. He's also lived in Germany and Greenland and a number of other places around the United States. He moved to Mustang, Oklahoma when he was 12 years old. About his youth, he told NPR, "It's funny, I didn't have much of a formal education. My mom, she's a singer and a great pianist, but she was never forceful about music. She wanted us to make our own choices and find our own way. She was always warming up every morning. There was always students in and out of the house, so I just kind of tagged along. I think I just absorbed it a lot, and I never thought of myself as an instrumentalist. I just wanted to be a singer like my mom. At church, me and my brother and sister would always get tapped to sing the solo or do the youth choir. Every Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, we were just bouncing around churches all over Oklahoma City, just watching her sing. It wasn't really until I got a little older that I found an instrument, which was guitar. No one in my family played guitar, so I just taught myself." And I think a thing that is so great about this album and Barty's music in general is how it blends so many genres, which was also instilled in him as a younger person. He said as a teenager, he became infatuated with hardcore and emo in the Midwest, specifically At the Drive-In, Norma Jean, Me Without You, Captain Jazz, Bright Eyes, American Football, etc., etc., etc.
Man, it's not hard to tell listening to this album that he pulls from a lot of different influences, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's what struck me so much about it. At first, like, we'll get into some of the other aspects of it in a bit, but like based on the work I knew of his before I started hearing the singles from the record, I don't think I anticipated such a melding and blending of styles. And it's cool to like hear a wholly original work in 2020. Like, I feel like that's really hard to do.
For sure. To paint that picture for anyone who hasn't heard it yet or just wants to hear it again because it rules, this is Mustang.
Mustang.
good song.
It's a great song.
Jake, I have a question for you before you go into the analysis.
Go ahead.
If that's okay.
Go right ahead.
I'm wondering why you chose Mustang as the song to pick off of this album. And in asking that, I fully recognize that because the songs on this album are so varied and the influences are so varied, it probably shouldn't be surprising that we have different favorites off the album. If Mustang is one of your favorites and that's why you picked it.
It's one of my favorites. It's not my absolute favorite on the record.
Okay.
I picked it because it was the first non-EP or national cover. It was the first song from the record that he released and that I heard. And it was kind of like, I was already so high on him to begin with. And then when I heard this song, I was like, oh, this is going to be very good. Like it went right from like, this is an album I'm excited for to, oh, this could be like something special.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. What is your favorite song on the album out of curiosity?
I think probably Flaggy or Flaggy God. I'm not sure how he pronounces it.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a top three one for sure.
What's yours?
I would go Boomer. I like him stepping into the hip hop a little bit more.
Agreed. I think that would round out my top three as well.
Yeah, it's really good. Okay, continue on, man. What do you have? What's the takeaway from the album here?
I think what's one of the many things that's interesting about Bartiz is sort of how he came onto the indie rock music Twitter scene this year, which was through an EP he put out called Say Goodbye to Pretty Boy, which is entirely reimaginings of songs by The National. It's incredibly good. In an interview with Bandcamp Daily, he said that he came to the idea to make this because he was at a national concert in Washington, D.C. and realized that he stood out. He said, it hit me how few black folks were in the crowd and how this genre, indie rock, seemed to exclude the contributions that black people have made to it. And then he made this EP just covering The National, who are like I love The National, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but they're like the whitest indie rock band in the world. And so I think it was such a cool way to put like a spin on something and to make that point. And it got him all this exposure and sort of broke him into this scene. And then everything else he's put out since is sort of built and built and built and built. And it's very cool.
It is very cool. I would strongly recommend everyone check this out. I mean, there's already been some good chat in the Discord about this album. You know, we kind of do a New Music Friday roundup in that Discord with things people have found or are listening to. And this happened to come out on a Bandcamp Friday, if I'm remembering right, Jake?
It did, yes.
So even better. So if you want to get in on such discussions, you can go to patreon.com/Columbia House Party and join us there and in the Discord. We're going to talk a little bit more about this album after this. All right, Jake, so you mentioned that you feel a little bit like you got in on the ground floor with Bartiz. Can you go into that a little bit more? And, you know, obviously this album is on its own very, very good. Is there a scenario where you are in on the ground floor on someone and then the album isn't that good, but you're like already pot committed and you want to stick by your guy?
Of course. I mean, I think that's always sort of the, I don't know if risk is the right word, but I think when you sort of, like, this is the first artist I can think of in a long time where I was sort of coming in very hyped before a full length came out. Like, there's a lot of artists I've discovered this year that are now some of my favorites, but have put out music before, or I came to them after their record this year came out.
Right. It's kind of like what we talked about when we did the No Bro single, where it's like, man, we only have five or six songs to judge off of, but I can't wait for the first full length.
Exactly. And with Bartiz, it was even more interesting because like five of the seven songs that were out on Spotify were covers. And then, but right, you could still hear it.
So you don't really know what an original album from him is going to sound like.
Right. Exactly. And the two originals that he had out on Spotify, which I believe were Hags and Going Gone or Going, were so different from each other and so different from the EP that it was kind of like, I truly had no idea what his full length would sound like. But I mean, he's a guy who very clearly has been working his ass off to make this work. And it's so cool to see it got a Best New Music on Pitchfork, which is amazing.
Oh yeah. It's 8.2, right?
8.2 best, like, and got the designation, which, you know, those things don't matter, but they also kind of do. Like there's people
it helps,
to which
especially that- on your first album, if you're talking about like, you know, earning potential and keeping yourself financially well off enough that, you know, you can maintain that creative freedom and creative control over your next project. It's probably pretty huge.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think it's so cool to see. Regarding the making of the album and his work, he told NPR that the last 10, 11 years, I've worked a very full-time job running comms and political campaigns and labor campaigns and climate campaigns. I've grinded and worked on music just as hard in the background. I always told myself that I would hopefully switch over if I could ever figure it out. He said, I'm not going to pop into Brooklyn and get $1 million and be able to live there. That's not how it's going to work. It's a continued journey of building and sustaining life around my music so I can continue to do this. It's, and regarding sort of what we were talking before about his blending of sounds, he said, it's funny that I could be expected to make one sound. Like how? I remember Igor and Flower Boy and Old Town Road. People were up in arms. People didn't know what to do. In my mind, it was like, these are the best pop records ever. It was everything. In Jealousy, the first song on the record, it's saying, come to a world where everything is everything. Because like when I look at Tyler, the Creator or Solange or Felicia Douglas of Dirty Projectors, they're all doing everything all the time. Pop songs, rap hooks, country structures, they're doing it all and they're black. And that's why, and that's important. Which I think is sort of a good point, and also why I feel like kind of a dipshit being like, I can't believe he blended all these styles.
I mean, I don't think you have to feel like a dipshit, right? Like it's not something that you, until you see it laid out like that, like it's not that obvious a thing. Like I feel like the industry has existed for so long as this is rock, this is alternative, this is punk, this is country, this is hip hop.
Right.
And like we've talked, and look, we've had a lot of episodes here, main feed and singles, where we talk about how, you know, like when you go back to our Lil Peep episode and how he kind of took pop punk and made it his own thing as emo rap was becoming a genre. Or you go to our bonus episode where we did Kacey Musgraves and her transition into kind of being a pop artist from a country artist, or even like the Machine Gun Kelly single we did last year. And a lot of our like bonus and mailbag episodes, newer bands like Origami Angel come up where it's like, you can't, whether it's, you know, across, whether it's black artists merging a lot of genres or white artists, or it, like that doesn't really matter to it at all. So long as, you know, no one's infringing up on like full on appropriation, which I don't think we've come across really yet in the albums that we've discussed. But yeah, it makes sense that in 2020, when everyone has access to everything and some of those borders have eroded, that, you know, we're going to get more and more genreless, I think. And I think it opens up, especially for the very talented and very creative like Bartiz or like Tyler, the Creator, or Solange that he mentioned, you know, those type of people who are better off not constrained by preconceptions and narrow definitions are going to be able to create incredible stuff like this, Live Forever.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think that it's, you know, the borders and the boundaries of what all genres are breaking. And I think that's only a good thing.
For sure. And, you know, the fact that this has been pretty successful early on, gotten a lot of positive feedback and got the Pitchfork love, as Bartiz tweeted shortly before, back in early October, like the week that the day that that Rolling Stone review came out, he tweeted, like Namdi would say, the price has gone up. So that's certainly the case. And I mean, the price of the actual digital album has not gone up. So make sure you go to bartizstrange.bandcamp.com to purchase Live Forever. And let us know what you think of it, what you think of Bartiz and the kind of genreless way he's approached this. Let us know either on social or if you're a Patreon supporter in the Discord. And if you want to be a Patreon supporter in the Discord, patreon.com/Columbia House Party. Jake, anything else for us, or is that a wrap?
No, I think that's about it.
All right. Well, thank you, man.
Thank you.